the alternatives are coal or gas.
Alaska Eyes Hydropower to meet energy needs. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 15th of December. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaska tribal leaders gear up for tomorrow's summit in Washington, D.C.
And we have been made criminals to hunt and fish in our own lands, and that is not right.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com.
The Alaska Energy Authority's Board of Directors made it official today
that the Susitna project be the primary hydroelectric project for Alaska's rail belt.
That's Karsten Rodvik, AEA spokesman. Rodvik says five board members attended the six-minute meeting. The move formally approves the November 23rd Rail Belt Large Hydro Evaluation Preliminary Decision document recommending the Lower Watana Dam project on the Susitna River. Rodvik says AEA was looking at two hydro projects, one at Lake Chacachamna on the western side of Cook Inlet, the other at the Susitna River site. Earlier this year, the state legislature provided funding for preliminary planning, design, and fieldwork to evaluate and examine the proposed projects. Rodvik says the Susitna project fits state goals of producing 50% of Alaska's power through renewable sources by 2025. He says the Susitna project would produce 2 to 3 times the amount of energy as the other project at the lower per unit cost. It would also have less environmental impact, simpler construction, and fewer licensing complexities. Plus, the Parnell administration is on board.
We've been working with the governor's office on the next steps for this project and look forward to the upcoming session.
Rodvik says AEA plans to initiate environmental studies regarding impact on salmon this summer. The idea of damming the Susitna River is not new. It's been floated on and off for a couple of decades, with little success. But as KTNA's Diana Hecker reports, more recent pressures to produce affordable, renewable energy are driving the state to take a look at a scaled-down version this time.
The Energy Authority decided that the Susitna project would be the most likely candidate to be licensed and built. Karsten Rodvik explains.
We know that there is a great need for cost-effective, reliable, long-term power on the rail belt.
The project would cost approximately $4.5 billion, and the Energy Authority estimates that it has a lifespan between 50 and 100 years.
The proposed dam on the Low Watana site would be approximately 700 feet tall, and it would either be an embankment or a roller compacted concrete dam. The length along its crest would be 2,700 feet, and it would create a 39-mile-long reservoir, which would be 2 miles wide at its widest point.
The Lower Watana proposal is on a much smaller scale than the bigger project studied in the 1980s.
The 1980s project involved a two-dam proposal. The dam was going to be much higher, 885 feet high, as compared to this 700-foot high. And then furthermore, the 1980s proposal involved a much larger megawattage, anywhere from 16 to 1900. It was far too big for the need.
The Lower Watana proposal would produce an annual energy of 2,600 gigawatt hours and an installed capacity of 600 megawatts. With Cook Inlet gas supplies waning, utilities like the Matanuska Electric Association are welcoming the news of the state support of a large hydro project in the rail belt. But there are some impacts too. The Energy Authority discovered last year that some king salmon were documented above the proposed dam site. Rodvik said that this will be studied in this coming summer. Also, grayling habitat would be wiped out where the reservoir lake would be built. The Alaska Energy Authority has not done detailed studies on job creation, but Rodvik said that a project of this magnitude would require a substantial and well-trained workforce. The next steps are that AEA is looking for a lead engineering firm to help guide the Energy Authority through extensive environmental field studies.
You know, we cannot be certain at this time of the level and the nature of state financing.
Asked about the rationale of why Alaska is pursuing a large hydro project while many dams in the lower 48 are in the process of being taken down, Rodwick said that the Susitna project represents the best opportunity to get affordable energy for the rail belt.
The alternatives are coal or gas.
If the project gets the green light, Rodwick said there will be a long and expensive permitting process with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. He said that if AEA can initiate the FERC permitting process in January 2012, the Sioux Hydro project could be operational in 11 years. Reporting in Talkeetna, this is Diana Hecker.
Governor Parnell today presented the starting point for legislative debate over next year's budget, calling on Alaska for more development of the state's natural resources. He told the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce and later in a press conference that his focus is on making the most of what Alaska has to offer and being ready for whatever happens with the rest of the nation. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
Governor Parnell says the state is sitting on some $12 billion in reserves that would, if necessary, carry through 2 years of normal state spending with no additional oil revenue. It's even enough, he said, to get through 1 year without any federal money. His goal, he said, is to maximize the state's huge opportunities, both in cash and natural resources.
Alaska is a storehouse, not a warehouse, of resource wealth. We have huge reserves of oil and gas, at least 43 billion barrels of oil and 250 trillion cubic feet of natural gas yet to be developed. Rich deposits of minerals are in the vault waiting to be unlocked on more than 40 million acres of state lands. And Alaska harvests more pounds of seafood each year than is annually consumed by this nation. Folks, we are a storehouse of resources that we need for our jobs and that America needs to sustain itself.
Parnell's major budget emphasis is on new spending for energy that'll help create infrastructure opportunities for years to come. He said the budget reflects spending to use the energy of water and other renewable energy sources. $65 million to jumpstart the Susitna Hydroelectric Dam, $25 million for renewable energy grants, $10 million for a Southeast Energy Grant Fund, and $25 million for weatherization programs.
We're going to work, and we are working, to proactively meet Alaska's energy needs from both sides. We're developing more, and we'll be good stewards of our energy.
Parnell's plan also spends about $175 million to continue work on the natural gas pipeline from the North Slope to Canada, as well as paying for the next phase of work that needs to be done on developing an in-state gas pipeline to the rail belt and South Central. Parnell referred to several of his priorities from last year that are in the budget the legislature's getting, such as more money to fight domestic violence and sexual assault, merit-based scholarships for graduates of Alaska's high schools, and money to upgrade state buildings where maintenance has been deferred. However, the budget is now in the hands of the legislature, and the governor will have to justify what he's given them. Senate Finance Co-Chair Bert Stedman says he's disappointed that the governor is using savings set aside in the current budget and has prepared a budget that seems to draw a small amount from reserves next year. Stedman says the legislature set aside the $12 billion the governor points to, and he wants to save even more.
It leaves you no ability to set money aside for the challenges that we're going to face in the future when we have, you know, a problem with our oil supply or a spike down in our pricing on oil. And I want to see our savings increased over the next couple, 3 years. Preferably, we can do a little bit every year. We've got roughly $12, $13 billion in excess liquidity laid aside right now, not counting the permanent fund. And we want to increase that a little more.
Stedman praises the governor for slowing down the rate of growth on the operating side of the budget to approximately 1.9% over next year. He says the finance committees will decide what changes to make, but he declined to point to anything that needs reducing at this time. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
You'll find a link for the complete budget documentation at our website, aprn.org. Employees of the Arctic Region Supercomputing Center have been given notice that their jobs could end next summer. 45 full-time employees and a number of part-time workers at the University of Alaska Fairbanks facility were notified yesterday. UAF Executive Officer Bob Shefchik says the move is an anticipation of the loss of a Department of Defense research support grant that funds most of the center's budget.
Staff have been provided notice that it's highly likely that our contract with DOD will not be extended, and therefore they will be provided layoff notices of 6 months while we work to identify those staff that will be in the supercomputing program after June 1st.
No formal decision has been made, but the DOD is working to reduce the number of supercomputer centers it contracts with and has indicated the UAF grant will likely be cut. That would trim the center's budget from the current $12 million to $2.5 million. Shefchik says the plan is for a downsized supercomputing facility.
We're looking at a core of 10 staff and a limited number of research staff that are supporting grants and contracts that are non-DOD.
Current Supercomputer Center employees will be given first opportunity to apply for the positions at the smaller operation, but Chief Scientist Greg Newby will head up the downsized facility. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, ever wonder how Cape Smyth got its name?
My grandma had that because she was the wife of a very important whaling captain, but she was one of the few people in her generation that I saw that had the tattoo.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
Anchorage police report that yesterday morning, a man unsuccessfully tried to abduct a student walking to Clark Middle School. Any such incident is disturbing, but this one is even more so because it's very similar to attempted abductions that took place last January. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
The girl told police that the incident occurred about 7:25 Tuesday morning as she walked to Clark Middle School in Anchorage's Mountain View area. Department spokesman Lieutenant Dave Parker describes what happened.
A silver van or a gray van, it was darker, tinted windows, driven by a black male adult with very light skin, had pulled over and he asked her to get into the vehicle and show him where the school was. This frightened her. She ran away. The vehicle actually followed her for a short ways and she slipped on the snow and then the vehicle actually ran over her foot.
Parker reports that the terrified girl managed to get to her school. The police were immediately called. Officers launched a search of the area but couldn't find a suspect or vehicle matching the description. He's described as a light-skinned black male in his early 20s. He is thin, has short hair, and was wearing a beige or light tan hoodie. Adding to the Anchorage police's concern about the attempted Clark abduction is that the description and method are all too familiar.
The description of the suspect and the description of the vehicle pretty much match the description of the suspect and vehicle in similar incidents that took place in January.
Those reported three incidents all involved 10 and 11-year-old girls who were walking to school in the morning. Like the Clark School incident, they took place on Anchorage's Greater East Side, one by a Taku Drive bus stop, the other two near Creekside and Ptarmigan Elementary Schools. They extended over a two-week period with the final two attempts on successive days. In two of those attempts, the man also used his vehicle to strike the girls. In one case, the girl actually got into the vehicle, but started screaming and jumped out of the SUV when she saw he was going to drive by her school. The police did not find a suspect. Parker says parents should talk to their children about safe walking practices, not getting into any car with people they don't know, and whenever possible, walk with a friend or friends. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Alaska Native tribal leaders are gathering in Washington for tomorrow's Tribal Nations Conference with President Obama. Each of the country's 565 federally recognized tribes were invited to send a representative. This is the second time the Obama White House has hosted such an event. Marvin Kelly with the Monix Tribal Council says he hopes this year Alaska's voice is heard loud and clear.
Well, there's more representation from Alaska, more people, so hopefully with all the other voices from the other villages, we'll be able to bring out our concerns in a stronger voice.
Kelly says his top issue is getting help dealing with the high costs of living and transportation in rural Alaska. Kelly attended last year's summit and says the Obama administration did help out by sending some stimulus money to his community for building projects.
In Monarch, we got the Recovery Act, or the ARRA. We got 6 homes there, but you know, most of the, we probably would have got more homes if the cost of transportation would be less, because it's so high, like probably 50% of it is shipping.
ECIAC's Mike Williams wants the federal government to help in the battle tribes are waging with the state over subsistence, fishing, and hunting rights.
The United States has a trust obligation to protect the First People of Alaska and help change that some of those policies that are hurting us, that we're struggling with. And we have been made criminals to hunt and fish in our own lands. And that is not right.
Williams says the one thing the Obama administration can do for Native people throughout the country is to sign on to the United Nations Declaration for Indigenous Rights. Others, like Congressman Don Young, have suggested the administration create a cabinet-level position for Native American issues. Young said he wants to see concrete items come out of the summit.
I just hope something fruitful comes out of it. Because last year we had the same tribal conference and not much came out of it.
Young is calling for a separate Alaskans-only meeting with White House officials. Tomorrow's Tribal Nations Conference will begin with an address by President Obama, followed by breakout sessions. As expected, the U.S. Senate today passed the tax deal President Obama struck with Republicans. Both of Alaska's senators supported it. Today's vote was 81 to 19. It was an unusual group united in their no votes, liberals and fiscal conservatives. Some of the Senate's staunchest spending critics voted against the bill because it will cost more than $800 billion. Passing the U.S. House will be trickier, where many Democrats are against the package, but signs point today that it will likely survive. Congress moved through business quickly today as it looks to leave before Christmas. The House passed a repeal of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell law. Congressman Don Young voted against it. He says despite a recent Pentagon report that convinced Senator Lisa Murkowski it's time to repeal, he does not think that's wise. Whether the Senate will find time in its schedule to follow up on the House's vote on Don't Ask, Don't Tell remains to be seen. It did take a procedural vote today on the new START treaty over nuclear weapons with Russia. That's a major goal of the Obama administration for the waning lame duck session. Tomorrow's vote garnered enough momentum to move it forward with 66 votes, just one shy of the 67 that will be needed in the Senate for actual ratification of the treaty. Senator Murkowski and 7 other Republicans, including Senator John McCain, join Democrats to advance it. Joe Miller plans to supply missing emails from his time as Fairbanks borough attorney. Miller spokesman Randy DeSoto tells the Associated Press that Miller printed emails related to casework and is going through old client email files to provide the borough with all the information requested. Borough attorney Renee Broker says the missing emails are needed for the discovery phase of a case challenging the tax value of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline and to meet numerous public records requests.
We've received 44 and counting different public records requests, largely centered on documents that Mr. Miller created, received. The discovery requests with respect to the TAPS litigation have been much more narrow.
Broker says she doesn't know what's missing, but that Miller deleted a large number of emails before leaving his job last year. The borough and Miller have gone back and forth over the issue since October. Broker said earlier this week that the borough was getting close to suing Miller for the missing emails.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by
Fire Island Wind, offering a fuel-free energy alternative to South Central Alaska natural gas. Learn more at fireislandwind.com.
Matanuska Electric Association has reported that the number of homes without power in the Matanuska-Susitna borough is down to approximately 500 from the high of 1,800 reported last night. High winds in the valley caused the outages, primarily from trees falling on power lines. Residents are being warned to stay away from the downed lines as they may still carry current. With winds expected to continue between 45 and 60 miles an hour through Thursday, many valley residents are keeping emergency supplies at the ready and watching out for flying debris. Carol Vardman, a manager's assistant with the Matsu Borough, says every available crewman is out working on repairing the lines. She says the highest gusts were clocked at 87 miles an hour in Wasilla yesterday. Blowing snow has impaired driver visibility and caused a number of accidents. Tanana store owner Cynthia Erickson says she's seen too many Alaska Natives die from suicide. Recently, she sent out an email saying it's time for Alaska Natives to start a grassroots prevention effort. She's already received dozens of replies, most from people who have been directly affected by suicide. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes has more.
Cynthia Erickson says it's important to start early to prevent suicide, especially among Alaska Native men aged 15 to 24 who commit suicide at about 7 times the rate of other Alaskans. Erickson wants to create sports cards with suicide prevention messages and photos of boys' heroes, Iron Dog snow machine racers. She has asked race champions Tyler Huntington of Galena and Chris Olds of Eagle River for their help. In an email, Erickson asks, what are people doing wrong? How can individuals help? And how can communities organize support and training? Raymond Titus of Dot Lake says he wants to share those and other questions and ask for solutions. He says he already sees one remedy.
You know, we need to focus on the spirituality of our lives, that we can share that with our young people, that there is hope for them to come out of their depression or thoughts that might be haunting them, you know, that there is answer. Find someone to talk to.
Erickson is raising money for the Sports Cards Project and to organize a suicide prevention summit in Galena. Galena is home to a K-12 school and to the Galena Interior Learning Academy, which has about 200 students from across rural Alaska. I'm Jacqueline Estes.
The North Slope Borough is hosting an open house this evening to unveil 3 watercolors from the first European expedition to Arctic Alaska. The paintings include the first Western depictions of the Inupiat people on the North Slope and their way of life. KBRW's Jake Neer has more.
Frederick Beechey led the first European expedition to the North Slope in 1826, looking for the fabled Northwest Passage. The 3-year voyage gave Western names to Barrow, Point Hope, Wainwright, and more. Cape Smythe was also named during the journey after a 26-year-old lieutenant of the British Royal Navy named William Smythe. He painted a handful of watercolors documenting the sights and scenes of the trip. Some of the paintings are the first Western depictions of Native people from the North Slope and their way of life. Today, 3 of those paintings have come full circle and are back in Barrow in the possession of the people of Northern Alaska. Dan Forrester is the director of the North Slope Planning Department and oversees the Inupiat Heritage Center in Barrow, where the paintings are now.
They came up on auction in London last September, and the mayor's office contacted me and said this is something that we think would be very good to have for the borough.
Forrester says the North Slope Borough bought the paintings for nearly $12,000 on auction. That includes the cost of shipping the fragile works of fine art painted on 180-year-old paper from Europe to Barrow. Forrester says the paintings are well worth the cost.
I think it's significant that we have these paintings for the public to enjoy here in Barrow. They are of this place. Mm-hmm. People can look at the way the people are dressed and maybe draw some conclusions from that and maybe update our information on what life was like back in those times.
The first painting depicts a ship called a schooner, which the explorers used to sail in Arctic waters after anchoring the larger, less maneuverable HMS Blossom somewhere near present-day Kotzebue. The two-masted schooner is vividly shown battling high seas as it works its way north. The second watercolor shows the explorers on shore erecting a pole indicating they had left a message for other voyagers. It is possible this is one of the first European depictions of the Barrow area. Finally, the third painting, titled Natives of Elson's Bay, shows an Inupiat man, woman, and child. It is likely the first Western depiction of the people of the North Slope. The man is holding a bow and arrows, the woman is carrying fox furs, and there's a sod hut in the background. Museum and Cultural Affairs Coordinator Janice Meadows says some of her own family history indicates to her the man must have been a very important figure based on his wife's tattoos.
The lady with the marks, my grandma had that because she was the wife of a very important whaling captain, but she was one of the few people in her generation that I saw that had the tattoo.
Meadows also says the clothing the figures are wearing are traditional summer garments, reflecting the August arrival of the expedition to the Barrow area. Planning Department Director Dan Forrester says even though the 19th century British explorers came with a characteristic sense of superiority and prejudice, the Inupiat people did win a certain amount of respect and admiration from the Europeans during their visit.
They marveled at these people who, from their point of view, had so little but were so filled with happiness and joy.
Forrester hopes the watercolors will be welcomed back to Barrow warmly. I'm Jake Neer.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Deanna Hecker in Talkeetna, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Jacqueline Estes and Len Anderson in Anchorage, and Jake Neer in Barrow. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a pre-existing medical condition, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the new temporary federal insurance program being administered by ACHIA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. The program is for those with qualifying pre-existing conditions and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months. Talk to an independent insurance broker or go online to achia.com. This message sponsored by ACHIA Fed. It's almost time to file online for your PFD, and when you do, you can make an impact by sharing just a little with a cause you care about. Celebrate the arts, invest in education, shelter a homeless pet, lend a hand, or even make a wish come true when you pick, click, give to one of Alaska's nonprofits. Visit pickclickgive.org to decide how you will make Alaska better with a small gift from your PFD. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.